We're really looking here at property crimes primarily in chapter 22, at least the first part. So chapter 22, would somebody read 7 to 15?
If a man gives his neighbor money or goods to keep for him, and it is stolen from the man's house, if the thief is caught, he shall pay double. If the thief is not caught, then the owner of the house shall appear before the judges to determine whether he laid his hands on his neighbor's property. For every breach of trust, whether it is for ox, for donkey, for sheep, for clothing, or for any lost thing about which one says, this is it, the case of both parties shall come before the judges. He whom the judges condemn shall pay double to his neighbor. If a man gives his neighbor a donkey, an ox, a sheep, or any animal to keep for him, and it dies, or is hurt, or is driven away while no one is looking, an oath before the Lord shall be made by the two of them that he has not laid hands on his neighbor's property, and its owner shall accept it, and he shall not make restitution. But if it is actually stolen from him, he shall make restitution to its owner. If it is torn to pieces, let him bring it as evidence. He shall not make restitution, for it has been torn to pieces. If a man borrows anything from his neighbor and is injured or dies while its owner is not with it, he shall make full restitution. If its owner is with it, he shall not make restitution. If it is hired, it came for its hire.
Okay, I think, again, these are very sensible principles of justice and righteousness. If a man gives his neighbor something to keep for him, and it's stolen from his house, now if they catch the thief, we've already covered that. What does he have to do? Pay double. If they don't catch the thief, what has to happen?
To determine whether the owner of the house had anything to do with the disappearance.
Yes. I mean, you could just say that somebody took it when you really took it. And how will we know? So what has to happen in that case? Yeah, you have to go before the judge. You have to have a trial. You have to find out before competent judges what their verdict is on whether or not you took it or not. Seems fair. You know, if that would be the question. In verse 10, if a man gives his neighbor some animal to keep and it dies or is hurt or is driven away when no one's looking, then what happens?
An oath before the Lord.
Yes.
And he had nothing to do with it.
Yes. He swears that he did not, you know, hurt the animal. If it's actually stolen from him, verse 12, he makes restitution to its owner. If it's all torn to pieces, what should he do?
Bring the pieces.
Because it's proof that he didn't steal it. You know, a piece or two or three of the animal proves that it was eaten by a wild beast or whatever. All of this has been, you know, somebody gives you something to care for them. Little different scenario if you borrow something. Because in that case, it's sort of you initiating the transaction. There's more responsibility on the borrower. What happens if a borrowed something is injured or dies? Yeah, they pay for it. However, if the owner's with it, what?
He doesn't have to pay for it.
Yeah, why not?
He wasn't there, he didn't call
it. Yeah, I mean, if the owner was with it, the owner could have stopped the negligence or could have stopped whatever was happening that was inappropriate toward that borrowed item. The owner's there and he let it happen, then evidently it wasn't negligence. Or if it was rented, well then the rent, you know, a possible accident or whatever is calculated into the rental price. So you don't make restitution. So you've got the case of where something's just entrusted to you. You've got the case of where you borrow something, either the owner's there or he's not. Or you have the case where you rented something. And each of those cases is a little bit different, but all based on principles of justice and fairness. Questions or comments about that? All right. 16. Let's do 16 to 27.
If a man seduces a virgin who is not engaged to be married and lies with her, he shall give the bride price for her and make her his wife. If her father utterly refuses to give her to him, he shall pay money equal to the bride price for virgins. You shall not permit a sorceress to live. Whoever lies with an animal shall be put to death. Whoever sacrifices to any god other than the Lord alone shall be devoted to destruction. You shall not wrong a sojourner or oppress him, for you were sojourners in the land of Egypt. You shall not mistreat any widow or fatherless child. If you do mistreat them and they cry out to me, I will surely hear their cry, and my wrath will burn, and I will kill you with the sword. And your wife shall become widows, and your children fatherless. If you lend money to any of my people with you who is poor, you shall not be like the money lender to them, and you shall not exact interest from them. If ever you take your neighbor's cloak and plaid, you shall return it to him before the sun goes down, for that is his only covering, and it is his cloak for his body. And what else shall he sleep? And if he cries to me, I will hear, for I am compassionate.
All right. So you've got a man who commits fornication with an unmarried girl. Who is he seeing as being damaged in that scenario? The father of the girl. Now, why would the father of the girl be damaged when this guy commits fornication with his daughter?
Nobody would want to marry his daughter.
Nobody would want to marry his daughter because she's kind of used property at this point. So, how does that affect her father?
Can't
sell her
out to sleep anymore?
I don't know about that. Andy? I don't know what that was. Exactly. You lose the dowry. You know, the father expects to receive a dowry from the prospective husband. Well, who's going to marry her? Who's going to pay him so he's losing out on the financial benefit that he would expect to receive when she marries? So, what does this man have to do? He has to pay the dowry and has to marry her. I can understand why he'd have to pay the dowry. That's sort of compensating the father for the loss of the dowry he'd expect from somebody else. Why have to marry her?
No one else can marry her.
So?
He takes care of
her. He has to take care of her. So he would still have the expense and the responsibility of caring for her. So it becomes the responsibility of the man both to pay the dowry and to marry her. However, what if her father does not want this man to marry his daughter?
Still has to pay the dowry.
He still pays the dowry. The father can veto the marriage. Maybe he's a creep, you know. But he still has to at least pay the dowry. Now, you can certainly see that God is not pleased with premarital sex. That's not God's plan, not even here. Now there were, as we talked about earlier, there were some aspects of what God allowed in the Old Testament that were not his preferred will and he does not allow today. But even in the Old Testament, it was not right for them to commit fornication. And so the father who's wronged receives compensation in this case. Comments or questions on 16 and 17?
Can you
Okay. In 18 and 19 and 20, you see some capital crimes. Sorcery, bestiality, and sacrificing to another god. All of those things are wrong. It's wrong to seek guidance from someone who's not God. Sorcery. Certainly bestiality is a perversion of God's order. And to sacrifice any other god. God demands exclusive loyalty. That would be an affront to thou shalt not have any other gods before me. So those are three things that you're to be killed for. Comments? And then you've got, yes, Joe.
These just seem like pretty extreme situations. I don't know if a verse would link it, but it makes me wonder if these aren't inserted because of God knowing how influenced they're going to be by other peoples. And if that's the case, then maybe the seduction we mentioned a few verses earlier would also serve as a warning. We might not think of it as extreme, but when we think about how much the world influences us toward fornication.
It's an interesting thought, yeah. Maybe so. And then he really pushes how you treat people who are in more vulnerable situations. In 21, he deals with the foreigner. And he says, don't oppress the foreigner. After all, you know what it's like. You were ancient. And then in 22 to 24, it's the widows and the orphans. God is very passionate about how the widows and orphans are treated, because it's easy to oppress them, to take advantage of them. But, and maybe, you know, the widow or orphan may not have any recourse, may not have anything they can do if you oppress them, but they have a God in heaven that will take care of it. You know, God is very concerned with how you treat, you know, people who can't defend themselves. And then in 25 to 27, it's the poor. God has special concern for the poor. And if you lend money to the poor, what were you not allowed to do? Two things.
Charge interest.
You could not charge interest. Now, it's my judgment that the prohibitions against interest in the Old Testament are in this light. Charging interest to a poor person, not dealing with like commercial loans and things like that. But you couldn't charge your poor fellow Israelite interest if you needed to loan him money. He was poor. And what else could you not do? No. What does he say in 26 and 27?
Take his cloak.
Yeah. You couldn't take his coat as collateral and keep it overnight. Why not? Yeah, he needed it to keep warm. He's a poor person. He doesn't have another coat. You hold it as collateral. He gets cold, and God will punish you. So you've got to be really generous to the foreigner, the widow, the orphan, the poor person. God is concerned about all of those categories. All right, comments and questions through this. Great.
I was just looking back at verse 18 through 20, and I noticed it seemed like there's a progression in those verses. First of all, it says you shall not permit them to live. Then it says you shall put them to death. Then it says you shall utterly destroy. Do you think that progression is intended to climax of the last commandment there?
I hadn't really thought about it, so I don't know. Ben.
I guess going to go on in verse 18 to 20. It's interesting. He's saying you guys need to take care of the sorcerers, people who practice bestiality. But then when it gets down to this oppression of people, he says, I will kill him. I will hear. And like God takes a person, you know, I mean, we read this list and we think bestiality, that's the worst. But it's almost like God's saying, really, when you oppress an orphan or a widow, that is the worst. And I will hear and I will excuse it. Not the other aren't bad.
Yeah, but that's exactly right. And we wouldn't normally look at those things as being that bad. You know, but God is very sensitive about mistreatment, about taking advantage of, you know, people who can't defend themselves. God is very much the defender of the defenseless. You know, he's got a I don't know what you call that, really, almost a chivalrous quality. And he's going to stand up for those who can't stand up for themselves. And, you know, good lessons, good principles for us. Other thoughts?
Just that, like he says, it's like they were in Egypt. This is a direct contradiction to what only God's done for them.
You're exactly right. God delivered them. Eric?
Verse 20, like, it's, I think it's saying kind of if you sacrifice to another god, then you will be sacrificed almost like an offering to God by your death.
Because okay, that makes sense.
Can be rendered set apart as an offering to God.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, that's good coming. Okay. 20, to us.
God's commandments haven't changed much. James 1:27, when he talks about pure and undefiled religion, is this to visit the orphans and widows. There's so many times he talks about orphans and widows in so many different books. Isaiah, Jeremiah, he always had a special place in his heart for those who were less fortunate.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Lots of commands for concern for people in vulnerable situations. Yes?
Verse 25, he talks about money lenders. If you look at Nehemiah 5, where they were exactly usury from the brethren, you know, they had enough enemies of their own in Nehemiah, you know, where they're trying to build a wall and such. If they're eating each other from the inside out, this is why this law was given by God, you know, to prevent that from happening.
Yeah, good point. Okay. 28 to 31.
Should not curse God nor curse the ruler of your people. You shall not the lady offering from your harvest and your vengeance. The Lord of your son, you shall give to me. You shall do the same with your oxen and with your sheep. You shall be with its mother 7 days, and on the eighth day you shall give it to me. You shall be holy with me. Therefore you shall not eat any flesh nor the pieces of the field. You shall be with the dog.
Okay, some respect for God. And don't curse God, don't curse a ruler of the people. You need to have respect for authority. I think that's the idea there. And you need to pay the first fruits. Firstborn of the sons you give to me, same with the firstborn oxen, sheep. You know, God expects the first place in all things, and he expects the first fruits of the animals, the crops, or whatever. You're a holy people, so you don't eat things, you don't eat roadkill. You know, you don't eat things torn to pieces in the field because that would be unholy and unclean. Comments? Tim?
Is this how Paul quotes when he curses some form of God? He yells at the high priest. He said they were respecting their rulers. He said that.
Maybe that is where the citation was. I'm not sure. I think there Paul was being sarcastic. You couldn't tell he's a ruler. You know, that's my opinion of Acts 23. Daniel?
Wasn't the issue of the firstborn of your son you shall give to me? Is that kind of like what had to do with Samuel? I mean, is that...
No. This is more with Exodus 13 and the redemption of the firstborn. You give him to God and you pay for him to buy him back from God. Other thoughts? Michael.
Somewhere, I think Eric in the last section, it said devoted to destruction.
Yes.
That language is really, it's a little different. It's like a special language to be like, this is totally ridiculous, stay away from this. That language you use when they go into land and places are being devoted to destruction. How they were supposed to be devoted to God, and yet because of all these great things he's done for them, deserve that, and yet some of them would end up being just as his enemies, devoted to destruction.
Mm-hmm. Good point. Other thoughts?
Are this rulers of Israel?
I think so. Okay. Various principles of justice. Now, chapter 23, verses 1 to 9.